Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert, and I am sitting across the table from my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing, honey?
I'm great. How are you, Daniel Reichert?
You know, I'm doing great because one of the things I really appreciate about doing this podcast with you is I can go back to my roots sometimes.
Okay.
And, you know, we cover a lot of television.
We do.
Or, you know, the occasional documentary or the television serial.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to go back to my roots as a film student, as a student of the cinema.
As you are, yes.
As I am, yes. I have a degree from a major institution saying I am a film expert.
Yeah, you're an expert in film.
Yes, and we partook in the cinema very recently. It was on Hulu, and it was a movie called Gamer.
Does cinema imply going to the theater?
I think when you say that you're a fan of cinema, or you're a cinemaphile, that's probably a thing. I think that's a word.
It is.
I think if you Googled it, it would be like, oh, a guy who loves film.
Or girl.
Or girl, yes. Fella or lady who loves film is what the definition would say, the textbook.
It might just say a person who appreciates.
That would be way simpler. Yeah. Yes. So a film lover, such as myself, a cinema lover. And also I love video games.
You love not only film, or not just film, but specifically quality, fine, celebrated feature films.
Well, yes, I'm a
student. Casablanca, Godfather.
Yes, I've definitely seen all these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've seen all those classics.
Right.
And I've also seen, I haven't seen those, but I have seen Gamer.
Well, you don't need to see them if you've seen Gamer.
I know, that's the thing. I figured, like, I know they're respected and everything, mm-hmm. but let's just cut to the chase and get to the peak of cinema and watch Gamer.
Don't need them. Yeah, Gamer's all you need.
The 2009 Gerard Butler vehicle, mm-hmm. Which I did not realize was made by, I think I should have written it down. I think the guy's name is like Neville Dean or something. It's like two dudes that, the Crank Dudes. And I was not aware that this was made by the Crank Dudes mm-hmm. until afterwards. But like 10 minutes into this movie, I was having very distinct Crank vibes. And you have not seen Crank.
No, and correct? I have no desire to.
Well, okay, we'll get to in detail here. But did you enjoy Gamer on any level?
Did I enjoy it on any level? It was incredibly stupid.
Okay.
So I enjoyed that.
Okay. Then I think you could find similar enjoyment out of Crank. Do you know what the idea behind Crank is?
From what I understand, and this could be totally wrong, but isn't Jason Statham himself like a bomb or something?
You've got the basic idea of like something about his person is weird, mm-hmm. but it's more he will die. So in the first one, I forget what convoluted way they explain this, but if he has to keep having high levels of adrenaline to stay alive. And so otherwise, like, his heart's going to stop. And
that sucks.
Yeah. So he's, like, standing on motorcycles and just constantly putting himself in death-defying situations. And, like, at one point, he has sex with Amy Smart on, like, a horse racing track in front of a bunch of people just to get his adrenaline up and stuff. It's insane and stupid.
Wow.
In the second one, Crank 2, High Voltage, mm-hmm. He has to just keep electrifying himself.
You've seen these movies?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I saw them both in the cinema, and I enjoyed both of them quite a bit. So the second one, he's constantly just like hooking his tongue up to car batteries and electrifying himself to stay alive.
So you were unknowingly more prepared than I was going into Gamer.
Well, no, I didn't know it was the Crank guys. I guess I was...
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You unknowingly were more prepared.
I see what you're saying. Yes. So on some level, my soul was prepared for Crank-like action.
Yes.
Yes. I see what you're saying. This is very much like that. Namely in the extremely hyperactive editing,
mm-hmm.
which is evident from just the first second.
It is so irritating. You can't, there's no still shots. There's no shots that show like more than two people. It's always super close-ups of their face. And it's really just janky. Like, I don't know if it's handheld or whatever, but I usually don't notice this stuff because unlike you, I'm not a film expert.
Right, of course.
I know what a good movie is a good movie, but I'm not someone that's going to critique the cinematography or whatever you call it. But this was so atrocious that I couldn't help but pay attention to it.
Well, because there are a ton of action scenes, but the way they're shot is, you're right, it's always just like extreme close-up on one person mm-hmm. with a gun shooting, and then like three frames of like, blah, like a reaction, and then cut back to like feet, and then dust, and then just screaming shots or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you never have any sense of what the overall thing that's going on is.
I don't want to go through every painstaking aspect of this plot.
Oh, no.
But I just want to say there's like this, like maybe 10-minute action sequence in the very beginning of the movie. And as we were watching it, I was eating ice cream. And I was preoccupied with my ice cream. And I thought to myself, maybe I should be paying attention to this. But I watched like a minute or two of it, and I was like, oh, no, I don't have to watch this.
Just knew right from the beginning?
I knew right from the beginning that this 10-minute action scene was going to be of absolutely no consequence, and I was totally right.
You are. And what it does, like, yeah, well, you don't need to go beat by beat, but let's explain the broad strokes of Gamer here. First of all, it's The Truman Show meets The Running Man meets The Matrix, but a billion times dumber than any of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all based around this game called Slayers.
Right.
And okay, so here we got to explain how this works. Slayers is, like The Running Man, it is criminals that are put into this game, but it's like real people. So it's not like polygons. It's not whatever. It's actual criminals known
on death row.
On death row. And they are called icons. And so their brains are like outfitted with, they spend like 3 seconds trying to explain
this
with a diagram.
It's nanite technology because nanomachines.
Oh, okay. Now
so
we're talking.
So pretty much they put these nanomachines in their brain and I guess it has like remote access. So with the nanomachines, someone playing the game can access them and control the icon.
Yeah, like every one of the icons has an IP address and you can like have remote access to their brain. And so it's just a bunch of kids sitting around in like weird holodomes or whatever, at least the one kid that we're going to meet later. And they control it via like, we don't see any controllers in hands or anything. It's like this weird planetarium thing this kid is in. And it's like a Kinect controls. Like he's not holding anything. Mm-hmm. He's just like pointing and moving and I guess maybe I'm overthinking it by even thinking about how this works from a gameplay perspective, but I couldn't help it.
You're definitely overthinking how it works from a gameplay perspective, but the game is pretty much whatever death row inmate can survive however many missions, I don't
30.
Even think, 30 missions,
yeah.
Then they will get their freedom, but
yes.
No one has been able to attain that except for Gerard Butler, who plays Cable.
Yes.
He's gotten the closest thus far.
Yeah, he's at 27 kind of at the outset of this movie.
I think it might be worth setting up the world itself. So the year is 2034, and I didn't know that from watching it. I saw it on IMDb or something.
Well, because it says at the beginning it's like 3 years from this exact moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how they describe it, or maybe 30 years or something, but they're like, it says from this exact moment. So it's kind of just nebulous near future.
Really weird. And so society itself has, like real actual society, has degraded to the point where people are killing other people for entertainment's sake and there's no value to human life. So in addition to Slayers, there's also this game called Society.
Yes.
Where, much like in Slayers, where people control the death row inmates, people, regular players, control actual other human beings who are actors in society. And they can have them do anything from have sex with people, kill people. I don't know. It's like Second Life, except instead of controlling an avatar, virtual avatar, you're controlling a real person.
Totally. It's more of like a social space, PlayStation Home type thing instead mm-hmm. of like, you know, full-on action Call of Duty. Like, I think they Googled video game in 2009 and the two results were like Call of Duty and Second Life. And they're like, okay, we get it. We'll make those.
So us people who play video games, are played by this really grotesque, morbidly obese man who dunks waffles into a giant vat of syrup and just is constantly touching his greasy body.
He's sweaty. He is the most extreme like caricature of a gamer that could be like drawn up by someone who doesn't mm-hmm. play games, which is morbidly obese, constantly like rubbing the sweat all over his body.
Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, the waffle dipping was a great touch, I thought. Also, I couldn't help but laugh when we see a wide shot of his like game station at some point, mm-hmm. and it is just multiple monitors set up with close-up shots of sizzling bacon on it, which that's just objectively funny, I think.
And I guess that's supposed to be you know, us, the consumer, right?
Or one of them. Like, he's one of the players of society.
Well,
sure.
I know, but that's all we see, so from our perspective.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they do show a lot of those things where it's, like, close-up of, like, old lady going, like, scrunching up her face and, like, all these people, like, screaming and mm-hmm. playing the game. So, like, yeah, they're all just, society is just a bunch of screaming, game-addicted maniacs in the future.
Yeah, and they have no regard for the fact that the avatar they're controlling is an actual person. So the people that are actors in society, I guess they make some kind of salary, right?
Yes, yes, because Cable's wife works for it, and it's her career.
So there are, I assume, millions of these avatars, right? And they all make a salary. I assume it's really expensive to play society to get a membership because you're paying to control another human being.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it would cost a lot of money to not only hijack them mentally, but also maybe have them get raped pretty frequently.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing that seems like a frequent thing in this game.
I feel like that would cost a lot of money to do.
I don't know if there's an analog in the current world, but that seems like something that would be...
And yet it seems like it's within the grasp of this really disgusting waffle-eating guy who doesn't really seem to do anything other than eat waffles and touch his body and lick his lips.
Yeah.
So that's why I was curious about why society is supposedly so profitable, and at the head of the creator of society is Michael C. Hall, a.k.a. Castle.
Yeah, Ken Castle.
He's the reclusive billionaire, and I guess in this world, reclusive means going on talk shows and... having song and dance numbers with your security team, but yes, whatever.
And having your face on, like, every magazine cover
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, and on buildings and stuff.
I think it's, like, on one hand, I think they were going for, like, oh, tech billionaire, you know, like, Steve Jobs type genius or whatever. But on the other hand, he's just hamming it up and, like...
You got a Steve Jobs vibe from it?
I think they were just going for the general, like, tech guru type thing. And
I thought it was supposed to be more, like, super eccentric weirdo. But see, I feel like more like, what's his name, from Ex Machina.
Oh, I could see that. Well, I mean, yeah, he was supposed to be like this.
That was
like,
more of
tech
a
genius guy.
Steve Jobs tech genie. But this was just like an eccentric weirdo.
He's super weird. And like, I couldn't get a real read on like his accent. And like, wait, is he supposed to be super smart or just crazy? Or because he is hamming it up. Like Michael C. Hall seems to be having a ton of fun as this character because I think he knows how dumb this all is.
Yes.
And he is just leaning all the way into it. To the point where, like, I think he's actually genuinely entertaining in this movie.
Well, we learn later in the movie, I don't think it really matters if we jump.
No.
We learn that most of his brain is controlled by the nanite. So that could explain why his behavior is so strange.
Well, he was saying that his brain is the only one that transmits.
I know, because it's 98% nanites.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's the one, basically, like, the big thing at the end of the reveal of what he's been doing all this game stuff for, is that he is able to just control society. So, like, as all these people are putting these things in their brains and all that stuff,
he has real society.
Yes,
control,
real society.
Control people.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, all these cons, anyone who has basically allowed these, like, nanites or whatever into their brain, he can control them, which he, at the end, you know, does an example with this big song and dance number where he has everyone dance and fight Cable or whatever. But some important stuff happens before we get there. First of all, the game itself, Slayers, the action scenes, because they're so incoherent, I had no idea how to tell what kind of game it was. Mm-hmm. Or like, because they keep talking about like to get to the save point. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, again, they Googled video game terms and they were like, save point, because that doesn't mean like, oh, you're saved. Like, that's how the game in the movie makes it seem. Like, oh, I got to the save point, and then you're in this, like, safe thing or whatever. It's like, that's not what save point means at all. And there's other times where they talk about ping, and they're using ping to, like, describe input lag. Mm-hmm. And like, that's – we'll get to Ludacris in a second and his hacker group or whatever. It's just like they looked up, like, what are some video game terms, and then they just, like, very loosely threw it on. It's like, there's a teabagging joke in the first, like, 5 minutes or whatever. And, yeah, the save point thing bugged me. I know maybe I'm just being super nerdy, granular video game dork here, but it makes you wonder, like, who is the demographic for this? Because if you're going for gamers, it's weird because it's, like, just so loosely, like, all of it just seems super inaccurate or whatever. And plus, the depictions of the actual gamers in the movie are so unflattering that it makes me wonder, like, wait, are you trying to appeal to gamers in this movie?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Or are you trying to, appeal to people who just have, like, a loose idea of, like, oh, this would be a concept for an action movie or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think this is geared towards people that are serious about video games at all.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's a team thing. Like, is it PUBG? Like, who were the enemies? Like,
it's definitely not PUBG. This game came out in 2009.
Well, right, I know. But, like, I'm just trying to think, like, what the analog of, like, it's not like Call of Duty because everyone's trying to get, like, to the end of an area.
Well, maybe there isn't a direct analog. I mean, they are working with real people here. It just seems like a war scenario. And instead of one country winning, it's one person winning.
Yeah, but is it two different types of, like, is it two save points on either side? And it's two – because there is some concept of teams because, like, Gerard Butler, there are people in the game that he's fighting alongside and everything and not shooting.
The other prisoners.
Yeah, and they're trying to get at the save point together. But then who are the people that are shooting at them? Like, is this another team of prisoners and they're trying to get to an opposing save point? I know we're not meant to actually understand
that's
this.
Yeah, who are the people that are putting themselves up to get killed by these prisoners?
Yeah, like, we do get one that is kind of explained, which is Terry Crews, which he shows up like halfway through
Hackman.
The movie. Hackman, yes. His character is very, very deep. Apparently, he just loves murdering people.
This movie is filled with super deep characters. Cable's wife,
God.
Angie, or Nika as she's known in society, all she does in the entire movie is bend over. That's all she does repeatedly, just bend over. I felt so bad for this woman.
Yeah, whether it's before Milo Ventimiglia, Rocky's son.
You mean Rick Rape?
Yes, his name in the movie is Rick Rape, mm-hmm. and his namesake comes into play at one scene here where, yeah, I think the fat guy is controlling Rick. And then, oh, that's...
Yeah, the fat guy controls Nika.
That's right. He's getting her to, like, bend over or whatever, and the dude's coming in, getting ready to do the thing, and...
You mean have sex with her?
Yes, in very cartoonish, weird, licking his lips and grabbing his penis type of way. And right before that starts, Cable has escaped from Slayers at this point mm-hmm. and comes in and just grabs him and gives him, like, the most earth-shattering backbreaker, just straight up WWE. It is excellent. Just destroys him.
Now, I don't remember. Does at any point, do we see any revenge taken out on the morbidly obese guy controlling his wife?
There is the part where Cable knows that the fat guy is looking through his wife's eyes. And so while Cable is, like, inside society, remember he, like, mm-hmm. grabs his wife's head and is, like, speaking through her to the guy. He's like, I'm going to find you. I'm going to kill you or whatever. I think he just scares the shit out of him. I don't think he ever actually, like, finds him or kills
him. I feel bad that – honestly, I feel bad that he takes it out on Rick Rape because Rick Rape, the man
– Oh, that's true.
He really didn't have any say in all the raping that he was doing. I mean
– You don't typically hear sentences like, I feel bad for Rick Rape.
Well, in this particular context, I mean, I think it would have been more appropriate to – you know, attack the man who's putting his wife through all this stuff.
That's true, because Rick Rape is probably just a guy who just wanted to...
He just needs money just like his wife needs money.
Yeah, he's completely out of control of the situation. He did not choose to do any of this stuff. Yeah, he met her at the Thorax Bar, which is a place where, oh my god, the different shots there are just like shots of moaning and then boobs and then like a shot of a bug and it's just complete nonsense the whole time. Okay, so also, there are a bunch of cameos in this movie that don't matter at all. And it's not like cameos of characters that don't really do much. It's characters that literally show up for like 20 seconds and have no impact on the story whatsoever mm-hmm. and are never heard of again.
Like John Leguizamo?
Yes. John Leguizamo shows up pretty early. And I didn't know anything about this movie going in outside of, I knew it was Gerard Butler and it was loosely tied to games. Mm-hmm. And so all these things keep popping up like, oh, John Leguizamo. Oh, here's a giant Ludacris head on a hacked talk show screen or whatever. But Leguizamo is one of them that just cracked me up.
His sole purpose in the movie is to just provide a little bit of exposition for Cable and for Hackman. I mean, that's his only purpose.
And once he's done that, he is like, he's got a push broom and he's going across this like flaming motocross court and he just gets like hit by a car or something, right? Or shot or something blows him
up.
Yeah. So Leguizamo means nothing. Meaning even less than Leguizamo is John DeLancey, who was Q on Star Trek. And Bonk, you might know him as the Jane's dad, the flight control operator on Breaking Bad.
Okay.
So he's well known for Star Trek and he shows up as like the leader of Telnet. That does nothing. He's in one scene. Keith David is in it. Actually, Keith David has two roles. He has one completely non-consequential scene where he's interrogating the kid who's controlling Cable. Mm-hmm. That goes absolutely nowhere. And also, since he has the best voice in the universe, he is the guy whenever they show like a commercial for Slayers that's like, Slayers. I can't. That is the worst Keith David impersonation ever, but he's got the best voice ever. And then the two, I won't call them cameos, but the two surprise people that I didn't expect in this movie that have actual roles, Terry Crews, who basically is just this dude who shows up and says, hey, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to go find your wife and kill her.
For
and
some reason, he super wants to kill Cable.
Yeah, we don't even really know what Ken Castle has offered him or anything, but he's basically just like, hey, go kill Cable. And then Ludacris, who is the leader of Humans, with a Z, the hacker group. And so he's just like, it's like this anarchist hacker group that's hacking into Ken Castle's talk show appearances and things like that. His base of operations is an arcade. It's actually a pretty good arcade. He's got Metal Slug. He's got Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. He's got Carnival. But overall, it just seems like they were like, hey, we got Ludacris to appear to be in a movie. Let's find something for him to do, which is more than a lot of other people in this. So, I think one scene that deserves to be called out specifically is when Cable is trying to escape from Slayers, and he chugs a bottle of vodka so he can go to a truck, because all the cars just seem to be blown up with no fuel in them or anything, and he throws up into the truck's fuel tank, then he pees into it, which is pee and puke allows that car to have enough gas to go.
Mm-hmm.
Brief chase scene, he bursts out of the boundaries, and we get the somber news report that Cable has officially been fragged.
He's been fragged.
He's like somber, like, we regret to inform you, fragged. Like, shows up on like every like Times Square billboard and stuff. Like, that's the thing about this movie is I feel like this movie kind of knew what it was doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying it knew video games or anything necessarily, but I think it knew the tone it was going for.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just look at Kira Sedgwick's character.
Yes.
I mean, she's supposed to be like a news talk show host.
Yeah, like a Sally Jesse Raphael type.
Yeah, what was her name? Gina Parker Smith. And like in all the still shots before it cuts back to the show, it's like her with like giant glasses on, like looking really like, you know, like film noir lady.
Constantly spinning and then like pulling the sunglasses down.
Yeah.
And like some of this stuff I think is genuinely funny. You know, I respect media that is willing to go super stupid and embrace it in a way
right.
like this. So also, weird thing, Kira Sedgwick seems to be totally like in cahoots with the bad guy, seems to be a total heel for like most of the movie, until near the end, like after this horrible rave scene where there's just like 90 cuts every second that's impossible to follow, it ends with Kira Sedgwick, and unless I missed something, I don't know why this happened, she pulls up in a fuzzy green van with a dwarf in it, and then saves Cable.
Yeah, I was so confused there too. I thought that they were going to, she was just going to say, oh, well, I'll help you. I'll take you where you want to go. I suspected that she was just going to take them straight to Cable.
Yeah.
I had no idea that she was actually good.
Yeah, I don't think, we paid attention to that whole movie. We weren't like talking or anything. We weren't like, you know, leaving or like,
I mean, I was eating ice cream, but
that is true, but I think one of us would have noticed if Kira Sedgwick, if there's any kind of explanation or if that hit the cutting room floor. It just feels like when they were making this movie, it's like, okay, we know it's kind of about games. And also, what actors can we get in it? And here's like, oh, okay, we found 9 actors whose names are somewhat well known.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, let's figure out roles for them. And no one really matters outside of Gerard Butler and Michael C. Hall.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
Which, if you could, this seems like a very Gerard Butler type of role.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this is the only kind of role he does. I mean, he does these kind of popcorn action movies that you really don't have to think about, right?
Yeah, like, I think I hadn't seen him in much for a long time until we saw him in that Den of Thieves last
yeah.
year, which that was fine, but that was also just, like, a total run-of-the-mill, like, heist movie type thing.
Yeah.
But this just totally seems like a good role for Gerard Butler, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the climax is... He has a daughter, by the way, and there is one scene where his wife is trying to get, like, custody of her because she's been put into a foster care, because this is where it's heavily implied that, like, the actors that play characters in Society the Game, it's, like, it's really looked down upon. It's
uh-huh.
like, oh, you're one of them. Like, oh, no, we've got your daughter in a nice home with a nice family here, which...
I don't understand why. So it's revealed that Castle is the one that adopted the daughter, but why? To what end? It's revealed that... Gerard Butler or Cable was involved in some like military experiment, and it was like the first phase of that nanite technology.
Yeah.
And he, through the nanites, he had killed his best friend.
Yes.
When he was under their control. And consequently, Castle abducts his daughter or adopts his daughter and has it out for Castle and won't let him like win the game, even though he's clearly going to. Like, it just doesn't, that's never really explained in a satisfying way.
I don't really understand why Castle has it out for him, because like, if he's running this game, which is also apparently like a show or something, wouldn't he want, like, all these billboards are like, is Castle gonna make it, will mm-hmm. he get his 30th thing, like, you would want him to come close to going all the way.
Yeah, and if you just let, if Castle was to just let him win and not stand in his way, then I'm sure Cable would have just found his family and just kept to himself. I mean,
yeah, this is where it's like very Running Man, because mm-hmm. if you remember that was like Schwarzenegger like fired on a bunch of civilians, and so he went to jail for like an unjust thing, and then becomes very popular because everyone loves him on the Running Man, but mm-hmm. then Richard Dawson has suddenly got it out for him and everything. This is extremely Running Man here.
Yeah,
just not nearly as good. I don't know why he has it out for Cable at all, but he's throwing Terry Crews at him, he's kidnapping his daughter, none of this
doesn't make any sense.
And then prepares a whole song and dance puppet routine for when he finally does get to the residence or whatever weird pyramid dune he's got.
So Castle's Castle.
Yes.
Did it strike you as kind of the same quality that you would see in like a mini golf course?
I could see
that.
Did
you notice that? I noticed like when the light hit the walls looked really lumpy.
On the inside?
Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it was just shoddily put together.
Yeah, it's like this really cheap just like exterior that if you just like pushed it would just crumble and fall down.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessary. Just film it in a really nice house. There's really nice houses everywhere that you can rent.
Yeah, I guess he's supposed to be like future eccentric guru guy, so he lives in this giant wedge of cheese or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's extremely confusing. But yeah, this is kind of a fun, wacky scene where he's like doing this real weird song and dance thing, and he's like singing some like Sinatra type song. And then after he beats up all these, this bot army or whatever, they're suddenly on a basketball court.
Mm-hmm.
Was that explained at some point?
No.
Okay, they're just, that's like the climax of the movie takes place on a basketball court out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Not established at all that Michael C. Hall loves going in there and playing basketball. No idea why that happens. I don't, if there's some metaphor or something that's escaping me, first of all, I'd be surprised as a film student. I should pick up on these things.
But also, I doubt this movie is the kind that's chock full of metaphor.
I can't imagine. This seems pretty in your
face.
It's
like Mother.
It's exactly like Mother.
Except instead of the house, it's a basketball court.
Yeah. I think Javier Bardem was actually the bad guy first before Michael C. Hall came on. But yeah, we get a boss fight against Terry Crews. He like snaps his neck twice and kills him pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do the They Live ending where like Kira Sedgwick presses a button that transmits like just in the middle of Castle's evil speech being like, don't you see what I'm doing? I'm using all those idiots. And it goes on every, just, of course there's like a big red button that transmits it to every screen on the planet.
While he's saying, I'm using all of humanity.
Exactly. All those idiots, those fools. Yeah. And so they try to do this thing where they cut back to Simon, the kid who controls him.
Right. Kid who controls Cable.
Cable, yeah. And he's in this movie a lot, but I just don't think he's necessary at all. Like,
no.
None of this matters at all. Like they try to make it seem like it's a big thing. Oh, he's got control of Cable again. He's going to help him stab, you know, Castle. Who gives a shit about this kid? Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand why he was being interrogated, why he got as much screen time as he did. Like, establish that, yeah, it's some dorky kid playing him, but the rest of it didn't seem necessary at all.
I guess that's the only thing that this movie kind of gets right about, like, the future in gaming is that, like, there are professional gamers who kind of are celebrities, but in their own niche. It definitely doesn't, you know, permeate society as a whole. We're not seeing them projected on, you know, buildings in Times Square.
And they really just don't lean into that very hard. Like, they make it seem like he is somewhat famous as like a pro gamer or whatever, but
well, he's obviously very wealthy.
Yeah, he's this rich kid in this dome or whatever, but yeah, totally unnecessary character, I thought. But yeah, he helps Cable stab Castle, and Castle's just like horrifically bleeding out on the basketball court while Gerard Butler hugs his wife and daughter, and then they drive far away. And then, despite this, it's supposed to be like the most futuristic game thing ever, of course it ends with game over, insert coin. It's like, okay. All right, decide, are we going future game or are we going Pac-Man here?
Oh my gosh. So, a little fact about this movie.
Yes.
It was originally called Citizen Game, but because Law Abiding Citizen, another movie starring Gerard Butler, which was actually pretty fun, You haven't seen that one, have you?
I have not.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
That was going to be released around the same time, and I guess they didn't want it to be confusing for people.
I'm sure. I can't imagine many movies being confused with Gamer. Actually, outside of, I thought, I had this confused with Stay Alive. Mm. Do you remember this one? This one, I looked it up afterwards, was 2006, and it was more of a horror movie.
Mm.
But I thought this was the one with the tagline and the commercials that was like, you die in the game, you die in real life.
Oh, I remember that tagline, but I don't remember the movie at all. I've never seen the movie, but I definitely remember that.
I thought that was this one. And then I looked it up, and it's like, okay, no, that was Stay Alive, which I remember because when I worked at Game Informer, we had, you know, we had this like archive room with every issue Game Informer had ever done in it. And there were a couple like special ones. One was made for the movie with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle, where they play Shadow of the Colossus. I don't know if you remember that. It's like a post 9/11 thing, and they like bonded over Shadow of the Colossus. I forget what it Rain Over Me or something. I forget what it's called. But Game Informer made a fake issue for that. And then they also made one for Stay Alive. And so I remember holding an issue of Game Informer with this fake game on the cover saying, you die in the game, you die in real life. Mm-hmm. That was made for the movie.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And we had actual issues of it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that must be a collector's item.
I'm sure, yeah. I don't know if there'd be any outside of like the set people in Game Informer. But yeah, I had that confused. But this was apparently 2009. And, you know, we're doing this episode for the 10-year anniversary of Gamer.
So just to refresh your memory, I have a little snapshot of what gaming was actually like in 2009, if you'd like to hear it.
Yes.
Here are some of the big titles that came out in 2009. Skate 2.
Okay, yeah.
50 Cent, Blood on the Sand.
Oh, just a genuine classic.
Halo Wars.
Okay.
Killzone 2, Resident Evil 5, Arkham Asylum, Halo 3 ODST, Demon's Souls, Borderlands, Bayonetta, Dragon Age Origins, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2,
yep.
Left 4 Dead 2, Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah.
And those are just some of the bigger games that came out in 2009. So very realistic depiction of it. Was like definitely a contemporary representation.
I mean, they were all basic, like Halo Wars. I think you were controlling actual Spartans.
I believe.
So those were, I remember crying over my fallen Spartans thinking of, oh God, they had families. Honestly, this is obviously a dumbass movie, but I think I like it.
Okay.
Like, I think, I'm sorry if you're disappointed in me as my wife.
That is a little disappointing.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, the sole female character just bent over a lot.
Okay. I will not at all argue that it is a flattering depiction of any group of people at all, gamers or women or anything. I just think the concept they pull off in a very knowingly stupid way.
The idea is interesting, but the story around it is just complete bullshit. Like, the motivations are totally hollow. Like, why does Castle want it? There's so many unanswered questions, or answered in a really unsatisfying way. I thought it was a terrible movie.
Well, I think objectively, yes. I think there is a difference between it's a good movie and I liked it. Because I think the things I like about it are, like, Michael C. Hall just having a blast with this stuff.
That's enough to redeem this movie.
No. I was going to say several things. Michael C. Hall having a blast with it. I think just how cartoony they went with a lot of this stuff. Like, the guy, you know, the fat guy with the waffles and all that. Like, that is a cartoon fat person, like, dipping waffles into a bowl and watching bacon sizzle on a monitor. I thought the random cameos were funny. I laughed a lot when Ludacris showed up and when John Leguizamo showed up. Not going to argue it's a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. I think I just enjoyed watching it in the same way that I enjoyed Crank and Crank 2.
Okay.
You didn't enjoy anything?
No, I hated it. I mean, there's no way I would have watched it if it wasn't for this podcast.
Right. I mean, but do you typically... I don't think you're big on, like, the camp watching stuff. Like, do you ever... Because I've watched so many movies just because I knew they were going to be dumb as hell. Like, is that something that... I guess I can't think of...
I mean, if it's really dumb, but, like, dumb in a smart way, like MacGruber...
Of course, yes.
Like, that's... Yeah, but if it's just purely stupid and it's just... Yeah, it just did nothing for me.
Okay.
And it was... It made me nauseous. I mean, the way it was filmed was just...
Oh, the directing and everything was awful.
Yeah, like, and it was just like, I'm all for violence and gore if it's, you know, well done and appropriate. This was just absolutely gratuitous, and it was like at a point like 15 minutes into the movie where it was all meaningless because it already inundated you with like heads exploding and shit.
Yeah. So I don't know, if you're a gamer and you want to see a movie that speaks to you, you just got to type gamer into Hulu there and you can watch it. But that'll be it for our discussion this week on Painting the Stream. So let's get into if we have any suggestions for this week. Do you have anything, any suggestions for the folks?
I do. And this one comes straight from the cockles of my heart.
Okay.
I can't really give a greater recommendation than what I'm about to give. And that is for the Sumo Orange. The Sumo Orange is only available for a very limited window every year. I believe it's like late winter to early spring. You can get them right now if you live by a Whole Foods. And the great thing about Sumo oranges is that not only are they extremely easy to peel, and they're built for peeling because they have a little knob on top that you just flick open, and it'll come all off in one piece, which is that if you get an orange and it peels off in one piece, that's a good sign that you're in for an orange extravaganza that your tongue can't handle.
Do you think even for orange novices they could do that, or you are a pretty seasoned citrus lover?
I mean, I'm a seasoned citrus lover, but I mean, it doesn't take a great amount of skill to peel an orange. Unless it's a difficult to peel orange, in which case I would say, you know, proceed with caution, because chances are that orange is going to disappoint you. But Sumo oranges are, take the Satsuma mandarin and just increase it by like 3 times. It's like a giant Satsuma mandarin. It's the perfect amount of juiciness. It's not too tart. It's not too sweet. It's not messy to eat. It's the membranes are thin, so you get optimal pulp and juice. Okay. It isn't too sticky. It's the Sumo orange, I think, is the best orange in the world, and you can get them right now if you live by a Whole Foods or a Wegmans or whatever. So definitely don't miss the opportunity to get them while they're in season. I don't think you'll regret it.
When does the season end?
I don't know. Soon, I bet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So get in there.
Get in there.
All right. I'll have to eat more of them while you're getting them in the house, while you're stocking them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I would suggest something. I've suggested a lot in the past. I have suggested it on podcasts and in books and things like that. But I've just recently started doing it again, and I was quickly reminded of how much use isn't there, how much benefit I get from this practice, and that's yoga. I like to do yoga a lot as just a strictly physical thing. I know a lot of people, before they know what yoga is, including myself before I knew, associate it with a bunch of kind of new agey, talking about chakras and nonsense like that and everything. But there are plenty of places you can go that is just strictly a workout. It's a hell of a workout. I like going to the gym a lot, but nothing makes me feel quite as like spent and felt like I really did a full body workout than spending an hour doing yoga. So if you can find a place, a lot of places have pay what you want things in certain cities, major cities and stuff like that. But if not, see if you can find a good video program. I've done DDP yoga in the past. I like that. There's plenty of videos and stuff on YouTube and stuff. So do some research, get a mat, and I have found it to be extremely useful.
Very good. Excellent recommendation.
Yes. And if we could also recommend to the folks at home, if you enjoy Painting the Stream each and every week, if you want to head to paintingthestream.com, you can click support this podcast and you can help us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month. Help us keep the lights on. Or you can just put in a one-time thing and then cancel. It's super easy, secure, easy to do. And we greatly, greatly appreciate every supporter, this being a small podcast. And so each and every time we get a new supporter, regardless of whether it's $1 a month or $10 a month, we like to present them straight from Bonk herself, a Bonku.
So, a little way of saying thanks.
Yes.
You get your receipt when you donate, you support the podcast, and you also get a Bonku.
Yes. And so we do have a new one this week. So, Bonk, do you have a Bonku prepared?
I do, Daniel.
All right.
And this one is for our friend Zed. I don't know if that's his real name. If it is, kudos. That's a
cool
wonderful name.
Yeah.
So, Zed, this one's for you, bud. Names that start with Z are rare and spectacular, as is Zed himself.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Zed, I hope you enjoyed that. I have a feeling Zed probably knows who he is out there. So,
Zed.
Yeah, that's his theme song right there. We had it prepared and ready to play here. So thank you very much, Zed, and thank you for everyone who participates in our listener support program. We will continue to put out this podcast each and every week for our listeners who support and our listeners who just listen, new listeners, old listeners. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for listening and supporting us. If you want to give us suggestions or recommendations or anything, you can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. That's also where you will learn what we are covering on the next week's episode. So if you want to watch along with us, you can also email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. Let us know your suggestions, corrections, anything you want there. And that'll be it for us. We want to thank, as always, Tom Monda for the theme music. And Bonk, thank you most of all for joining me sitting across this table.
Holy cow. Thank you.
Yes.
And thank you, Tommy.
Thanks, Tom, for the theme song. You're hearing it right now. Mm-hmm. And we are going to head out.
Yes.
We go ahead and hum it, and we'll see what lines up. Okay, we'll see if that lined up. I can't guarantee you that I'm able to line it up, but that'd I'm sure cool. It'll be perfect.
That would be cool if that worked out.
We'll see. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.